when it comes to starting startups. It's never fun when you have to lay people off. It's never fun when you have to say, sorry, can't pay you this month because we don't have enough cash in. I've had years of that. And it's, no one really wants to talk about that, even though all of us entrepreneurs deal with that on a daily basis sometimes. Maybe they think that, oh, as an entrepreneur, I'm going to look like I'm not successful because I'm dealing with this issue.
Hi there. Welcome to the Business Side of Fitness podcast. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Each week on the show, I leverage my 2 decades of experience in the fitness and wellness industry to have meaningful conversations with the movers and shakers behind some of the most well-known and innovative brands in our industry. This show is brought to you by Vanessa Severiano, LLC. To find out more about working with me, click the link in the show notes. And now the time has come to start the show. Everyone's got a story, and it's time to hear from this week's guest. Let's welcome Brian Chapone to the show. He's the founder and CEO at Centered, a travel wellness brand. Since Brian has an incredible backstory, I'm going to let him go ahead and do his intro instead of me reading it because it's really incredible. So, Brian, can you just share your background and how you ultimately became the founder and CEO of Centered?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks so much, Vanessa, for having me on. I'm excited to be here. Although I can't remember when we can do like face-to-face interviews, like on an NBC Today show. That would be so fun. I think I could see you doing that. So business inside fitness on a beach summer with a couch and we're talking and sipping, you know, espressos in the morning. It'd be perfect. No, let's do it. Yeah. I like to say I'm a recovering Wall Street guy that kind of fell into Wall Street, never really had any intention to get into finance, and then got my ass kicked and knocked on the floor a few times as an entrepreneur. So I'd say I'm still recovering from that after 20 years. So really, I guess the word terminology, serial entrepreneur, sure. More like just trying to figure out what we want to do with our lives sometimes. And then you have to reinvent when you hit a few walls, right? I remember when my first Stephen Covey books was given to me. I think it's Covey. I never say his name right, but it was, you know, five-year plan. Yeah, right. Okay. So it's like more like a 5-minute plan, especially in your early 20s. So, you know, I started my first business in 1999. I was very young. I was barely 20 years old and had this great concept. It actually was a good idea at the time. It was actually creating technology and curriculum for Finance 101, not only for the education programs, but for after school learning and so on. And that's actually, I thought was a great idea back in the late 90s. There was only one book written by Peter Lynch actually called Learn to Earn on finance. And I grew up in a pretty poor community where finance wasn't really taught. Credit wasn't taught. Nothing was taught. So that, what a great idea. And I went around pitching to raise money and they were like, sorry, kid, too young. And I ended up pulling it off a little bit. And then went to a VC firm. And I was like, this guy's going to get behind us. I know it. And he's like, yeah, no. Funny enough, later, he's now an investor and a dear friend over 20 years at Centered. So it does come full circle sometimes. And so I kind of fell into that and then found myself in New York City, partly because my family and my mom was from that area. And I always kind of had a dream to go to the big city and do something, and got an internship at a couple firms and got a break to work and start my own thing. And we ended up doing pretty well, you know, before 2008, you know, there was momentum. Fortunately, I think anybody could put together a business plan and raise capital before 2008. Kind of reminded me of the 2000.com era as well, which eerie feels like where we are right now, but it was just so easy to do. And I got in there and started pioneering my way through different ways to change finance, mostly globally, on job creation, infrastructure, finance, and real estate. And I say the way real estate, because 20% of our fund portfolio, maybe almost 30, was into real estate. And with 2008 hit, I would never forget it, September 15th, 7 a.m., I'm sitting in my New York office, looking at Hearst Building, which was my favorite building. I was dreamed. I remember thinking, wow, I've arrived. I got the office. I'm wearing a suit. I'm looking at the Hearst Building. You know, it was just so funny. And sitting there, and Lehman Brothers goes to $2 a share. I'm sure most of you are listening today in hearing this podcast remember that. Well, maybe not everybody, but a lot of us. And I remember our attorney calls me up and goes, yeah, get ready. I go, get ready for what? They go, well, they're going to call your notes. And I'm sitting down with my partner, David, and he and I are kind of work through this process. And within the end of the day, our company was pretty much went from a profitable $500 million company to almost nothing, because our notes were with Goldman Sachs, Bear Stearns, Lehman Brothers. We weren't over leveraged, but they had the right to ratchet back. And it was shocking, confusing, trying to figure it all out. It's just the beginning of a process where you look back and go, wow, probably should have just shut down the whole shop with our employees and with everybody right then. But you didn't know, we weren't prophetic. We didn't know. So we kept trying to save a business for another 3 years to a point where it literally just imploded. Luckily, we never lost investors' money in the fund, but it was, all of us partners and everybody else were wiped out completely. And I like to say my life was a country song that day. I lost the house, the wife, the dog, if I had one. And the best story I can say, and I was just talking about this the other day, is that one of my best friends came into town to support me because he was like, man, you're going through a tough time. I'm like, yeah. And my power was shut off in my apartment building in the Upper West Side. And again, I couldn't pay bills anymore. I mean, it was brutal. It was brutal. Yeah. And he goes, I have an idea. I'm like, what's that? He's like, there's an outlet in the hallway. And I have a picture. I'll have to send you this picture, Vanessa. But he found this picture, and there's like, you could see the cord under my door plugged into the hallway. And the reason I say this is just like, man, sometimes you just get your ass kicked. And sometimes it's because you made bad decisions. And listen, when I was young and arrogant, probably I made, poor business decisions, or I made, you don't really know. It's kind of what if, could have, should have. And that actually is how I got into wellness. Into my fitness journey. I was an athlete before, pole vaulter, really disciplined, really focused. And then kind of as you get into the professional life, that all goes away. It's almost like you go from two-a-day practices to nothing. And sometimes in life, that's what happened in business. I went from being in finance, working 12, 13-hour days to nothing. And it was just like this same feeling of like, I'm lost. I have no identity. I don't know what to do. I hired friends. They hate my guts now because I laid them off. Right. Worst rule I broke was hire friends. Right. and it's an interesting thing that you deal with these consequences even today. I sometimes think about that and friends that don't even talk to me because, I laid them off. And it sucks. It's just, that's the part of the entrepreneurial life I don't think a lot of people want to talk about. I'm happy to share it because I've had a lot of failure. I like to say 20 years of my failure brought me to where Centered is today. I think we named the name Centered because I need to every day challenge myself to become centered. I'm a very intense, type A, going at it type of personality. And sometimes I don't calm down. So for me, when I look at my brand, it just reminds me, I'm not really living up to my brand name right now. I need to be centered, And that day in New York was a blessing in disguise. I ended up jumping into classes. I found a friend of mine over New Year's Eve's wife was a soul cycle instructor. And they're like, hey, I'm teaching a class New Year's Day at 11. I'm like, guys, it's 2 a.m. Like, we're doing this now? I'm like, yeah. I'm like, all right, I'll do it. Stayed up all night, took a soul cycle class. And I don't want to admit this because I know the brand has its controversy and, its culture issues. But I sat in that back of my room and I kind of cried my eyes out because I was just like, it's like the first time I did a workout that no one could see me. And it's the first time I stopped, right? Sometimes when you meditate, you don't want to meditate sometimes because you start thinking about all your pain. And all the consequences and all these things. So we make our lives very loud. We make our lives extremely intense just because maybe we just don't want to stop and be in silence. And for me, it had to be on a bike. And that was the beginning of my journey of becoming centered. And it's a lifelong journey. And I got into wellness and I got addicted. And I just started going every day to the point where I was like, I can't afford that. This class is a ripoff. Next thing I know, I was trying not to be an instructor and teaching at SoulCycle. So talk about reinventing yourself. I mean, like went from a full circle over a 10-year period. And that at that point in time, by the time I was at Soul, I think it was 32 years old. Yeah, 32. So that was 2012. So it was a long process from 2008 to 2012. I kind of just wandered around trying to figure myself out. Because someone asked me the other day, man, you look what you built and all this stuff. I'm like, yeah, but the pain process for me, my journey took a long time. It didn't happen, And I think people need to hear that sometimes. It doesn't happen overnight sometimes. You don't reinvent yourself overnight sometimes. Maybe some people do, good for them, but for me, it was not. And that's actually how I finally got the confidence back to go back into business. And I remember saying to somebody, I'm never going to start a business again. Never say never. I'm never doing it. No more. I'm going to go work 9 to 5. First of all, no one's going to hire me. I mean, all I have is three references on my resume. That's it. It's, always been an entrepreneur. I really never really worked for somebody. So the journey just kept going. And I remember giving someone an idea. Why don't you put wellness spaces at airports? And a friend of mine's like, why don't you do it? I'm like, nah, I'm not going to do it. And I remember sitting at Joe's Coffee in the Upper West Side with some friends, just consulting on the side, teaching spin, just kind of living life in my early 30s. And I was challenged by a friend of mine named Joan. She's like, why are you sitting on your ass here? You need to go out and do this. And this feisty little Upper West Side Jewish lady, right? And I said, okay, Joan, you know, I'll challenge accepted. And so I remember going, well, I don't even know where to start. So I decided to look at data on the largest, busiest airport in the world. And the second largest at the time for transit travelers was Heathrow. So I literally just ran to spin the globe, picked Heathrow, and literally got on a flight because Heathrow never returned any emails because they're, you know, why are they going to talk to me? I didn't even have business. And kept asking cab drivers in London are kind of, they have the intel. And I literally cold called Heathrow, showed up at their corporate office. And by chance, when I checked in, the head of Terminal 2 was standing there. I'm not kidding. It was just one of these serendipitous moments. And I said to her, I said, I have this wellness concept. Can I have 5 minutes? She goes, you know, we were just talking in a corporate meeting about how to incorporate fitness into your journey. Well, there you go. This was back in 2014, 15. I think it was 15, beginning of 15. And that was began the new company FlyFit, which we were, our mission at that time of FlyFit was to change the travel experience when landing and arriving. As we started building out that business and launching at Terminal 2 and others, we realized, I think we're in the wrong business because the amount of people coming into our lounge were priority pass, which we all have on our credit cards. And they would pay us £12 to come into a lounge and you could actually charge £55 for a walk-in, mostly because they didn't have any tech. And that's actually, I remember going to my investors and everybody else and saying, I think we're in the wrong business. And it's never easy to do that because, you know, I go, yes, we've got the sites here. We had sites signed in Hong Kong and Singapore. We were growing pretty quickly. We started doing a joint venture with an independent lounge company as well. And we were going to roll this out. And I said, I honestly think this is the wrong play. I think the play is to pivot over to a digital experience where people can explore and discover a city and use the entitlement that's paying them to go into a lounge, but they use that towards going to like a yoga class or a rooftop lounge or some type of wellness experience inside the city they live in or the city they're traveling to. And most of my investors were on board, but a lot of them weren't. And then that became a battle. And it was interesting. So there you go again, more conflict, more friction. And I have a whole story there that one day I'll write in my book about that circumstance. My God, I mean, let's just say it was an ugly circumstance of splitting with investors, but figured it out. It was never fun. And then rolled what was left of my cash into Centered. And that became where we are today. And I'm so happy that I actually made the right decision because a lot of times I made the wrong decision, you know, but this decision to pull away from a business that looked like it would be thriving and it probably would have been thriving, but something told me it was off. And then look what happened 2 years later. COVID kids, all lounges shut down, leases were broken, airports shut down, and that business would have gone bankrupt if I had stayed in it. And it's just interesting to see how the life happens. And so that's really when we started getting started with Centered was I started tried to recruit some people at the FlyFit days to come work for me. But they were so busy as travel influencers or marketing people, one of them being Sarah, who's really my right hand, Sarah Gallo. And she got stuck in the Arctic. And I saw the post on LinkedIn. And I said, hey, this is an opportunity to get her out and help her out and help her get home. But also, you know, I think she'd be a perfect fit. And that's actually how we came together. And during the lockdown is really when I think Centered began. The idea had happened 2 years before. We were working on it 2 years before. But truly, I think the opportunity, again, to slow down. Our whole world went on pause. And it gave me the ability to go, okay, let's stop and think about this. I'm sitting from my home doing Zoom calls like this. Let's figure this out. And that's when we started pitching MasterCard and Visa and all these guys that I had worked with during my airport days about this new concept and giving their consumers a better loyalty product. So really our mission at Centered is to disrupt the loyalty industry. I think we all can agree that loyalty is similar to an NFT where we don't really understand it. What does it actually mean? Because it's subject to supply and demand of that day of an airline or point systems, meaning my obvious points today might be 200,000, but what will British Airways actually give me out of those points? Probably not very much. Why? Because of supply and demand. And I think it's kind of interesting looking at blockchain and NFTs and what's going on here. Very much, I think the original blockchain and NFTs was the loyalty industry. because it really was subjective. You didn't really know what the value was on your earn. But we've worked so hard as consumers to earn those loyalty points, to spend base rewards points, all those things that we do. And at the end of the day, do we really feel that great about it when we've earned it? Not really. I mean, honestly, if I'm honest, maybe my thank you points at Citibank to give me like some discounts at a restaurant, but there's not that many programs out there that actually I feel like, wow, I've converted my points and outside of airline miles to get a round trip flight. Even that's a bat. I'm using round trip flights right now this next week. And with my certain airline provider, and I think I had to use 200,000 miles to go to Scotland, which in the old days would probably been like 50,000 miles, you know? So it is interesting. So for us, that's really on our mission is to change loyalty and give people something that they can switch their points onto our platform and spend it in our marketplace, which we're really excited to announce that over the next 3 months. We'll be able to almost take almost every single type of loyalty point you have, convert it into centered coin and spend it in our marketplace. So that's really something myself and my team are really passionate about because I feel like consumers have gotten the raw end of the deal for so long when it comes to our loyalty. And you look at AA, American Airlines, I think the data showed last week, their loyalty business, AA Loyalty, did almost one something billion in profit, but the airline actually is in the negative. It's
crazy. Yeah, right? It's really crazy because I feel like the terms of those loyalty programs is like a moving target. Like I constantly get notifications from my credit card companies and I'm an AA Advantage member and I'm constantly getting updates to the terms and people don't even pay attention. So I love the idea of being able to apply those loyalty rewards to something that actually benefits you as opposed to like an Old Navy gift card. So Brian, was your business model always this B2B model and going after credit card companies and loyalty programs as opposed to, did you ever entertain going a direct to consumer model?
Originally, I always felt it was B2B to B2C. We have some exciting stuff that we'll be announcing. We're creating a new product right now that will be a consumer product. And it's interesting that you asked me that because I always kind of felt in the back of my mind, what we've built at Centered with discovery, wellness discovery in any place around the world. I mean, if you pull up our app right now and you'll show a map of, you know, the greatest, an F45 class, potentially a Barry's Bootcamp class, rooftop yoga, stuff like that. I feel like a consumer would want that just as much as if their bank's paying for it or not. But what we felt from a business perspective is I can win over consumers because with their loyalty, they're going to be given a gift from their bank or through in the app. So like their MasterCard app or their Visa app or whatever, a certain amount of free classes, right? So, but you're not going to get unlimited. But, you know, for us, we kind of felt like we could win over consumers, you know, once they click on to our API, we can win them over and send them out a push notification, hey, download our app and use it all the time. Because with like a lot of the credit card companies, we're only selling certain features. They don't want every feature, right? So they're not buying maybe our telehealth feature or our beauty features or anything like that. So maybe it's just our class feature, finding classes around the local city that you travel to. So we feel very strongly that our consumer product, which we're going to try to launch in December, is going to have a huge success just because I do truly believe every one of us, you know, would use our platform. So to answer your question, yeah, I think it is coming.
Well, that makes a lot of sense because usually businesses start with direct to consumer, which is a really hard nut to crack because the cost of acquisition, they run out of steam and they never get to roll out the B2B model. And so you kind of reverse engineered that, which makes a lot of sense from a business perspective. And then from a tech perspective, is it basically like, how exactly does it work? Does somebody go into their loyalty rewards and then it's a single login and they're clicking onto something that has like, you have like an open API or something that in the back end of Centered. So they're on your platform. Then you're able to, again, market to them to become a Centered client. And now you've acquired a new client while also making money. I mean, it's just like genius.
That's exactly it. And the user journey, what we really believe in is creating the most frictionless user journey possible. All of us care about one thing, time. And it's funny, if you look at all the apps we have too many apps for too many things that we do. Why can't we all have it in one? And what Centered is providing in our new product, we're linked to your Google Calendar. We're linked to Uber and Lyft. We'll be linked to Expedia and to all your scheduling. Even if I don't partner with them, I can link to their API. And everything is in one place. So when you pull up the app and say you're in New York City, it's going to show, you know, say you want to go to, you know, Pier Bar. It's going to show Pier Bar. It's going to show where it is in Brooklyn on a map. It's going to show you how far you can walk to get there, the times, because maybe you have a stand-up call at 8 a.m. when you wake up to go to your meetings in New York. Maybe you have a team call at 10, but you have an open space. It's going to go, well, there's a Bar Mitzvah class at noon. I can get there in 10 minutes by Uber. I can actually pay for my Uber and the class all in our app. That's really what we're created right now. And we're really, really excited about that because it goes back to efficiency and again, discovery. Because a lot of times when I'm traveling, I'm like, gosh, I don't know if I have enough time to take a class. So I'll just go for a run. The reality is if my calendar's linked there and I see it in front of me and I can book it all in one place, it's a lot easier than me going to all my different apps going, okay, looking up Barry's schedule, looking up, you know, Bar Mitzvah's schedule. It's all, we've consolidated all in one place.
And it, honestly, it's so smart, Brian, because this is how Amazon built their success. It's an all-in-one marketplace platform where you can just buy anything. And because they have your credit card on file and you're going to get it in 2 days, you're going to, even if you're paying a dollar or two more for things, but it all adds up. And so why hasn't anybody else created a marketplace like this?
Great question. I can't say I am a genius because honestly, I'm not that smart. You know, I am shocked every day, you know, to see why no one has done this. I don't know. It's a great question. I think people have tried to do stuff similar, but it comes down to timing and what we want as consumers. And sometimes, a lot of times with consumers, we never knew what we want. Like I think like 10 years ago, a consumer really didn't know what they wanted. So you could send out whatever, a blast to them, and they'd be like, eh. And customer acquisition costs, like you said earlier, wasn't as high. Now you've got this intelligent consumer that's going, on my daily life, I want my kombucha juice at 7 a.m. I want my stretch class at 10. I'm doing my stand-up call at noon. I'm picking up my kids at 3 o'clock. Our lives have changed. And so we've actually, for the majority of us corporate people who are working full-time, we've done a pretty darn good job with our time management, but they've never had an app where I could look at my Expedia or my hotels.com or my travel schedule all in one place. It's just never been done. And I think a lot of it had to do with the pandemic. I think for me, I had so much time to think about how would I use this? For me, I know my routine in travel and I can be spontaneous at times, but I'm also a planner. Meaning if I go into a city, I know what time I'm going to go. I know the class schedule, but for the most of us, we don't memorize the class schedule, and class schedules change, right? Like more than ever, look at what's happened with the pandemic. It's changed everything. So like, I think people tried to do pieces where it was like, more like, let's buy a membership like Soho House for remote working. There's a company that called Onda Life that I thought that was a cool product. It was a consumer product though. And I think a lot of companies that went out there, there's another company that would allow you to find gym access, you know, with a pass. And we offer that too, but it was consumer focused. And during the pandemic, most of those guys got wiped out. They had cool tech. They had things. So it wasn't like there was pieces of what we do, but it was never consolidated until I always look at a pie chart. I don't know why in school, I can identify visually to a pie chart. There was never in a pie chart, like I have my travel 10%. I have my fitness 20%. I have my wellness, you know, like a spa 20%. There was nothing in the pie chart that allowed my full wellness experience and my lifestyle to be in one place. This never existed. And I think that's what we're really trying to do at Center. And actually that's the Center coin that we're creating, where you can start earning those coins and using it towards that pie chart that you do on your daily basis. So I don't know why others haven't tried it. Maybe they had, we just didn't see it. But, you know, I think it's sometimes just about execution. For me, I've always been pretty scrappy. You being an entrepreneur sometimes, I mean, all of us can relate. A lot of people have great ideas, but to execute on those ideas, it's a different thing. And so I think for what I'm proud about with my team is we've executed on a bootstrap budget over the last 4 or 5 years. Like nobody wanted to touch travel during the pandemic. I mean, I remember a guy from Yahoo Finance saying, you're either crazy or you're onto something. Probably both. But, you know, I think a lot of it had to do where before the pandemic, there was companies trying to do some stuff like this similar. But I think the problem too, and I've noticed this in the fitness industry, is everybody wants to compete with everybody instead of collaborate. And I think you got big brands that were like, we're the best. I saw this at SoulCycle and I saw this at Peloton and I saw this at WeWorks. I saw this at so many big companies we are going to try to do everything to win the consumer to buy more stuff instead of collaborating. And I think that's dangerous over the long run, because you start looking like you're like an arrogant brand. Right. And I think what we're seeing now is every brand's trying to do more than they should, stick to what they're good at, especially in fitness. Like, they're all trying to get into corporate well-being because they want to pivot over to B2B. Well, maybe you could do that, but that's a pretty saturated market to go be like, I'm going to go be a studio that does brick and mortar and maybe some digital content, and then go now try to sell that to Meta. You know, so I don't know. I think what I've noticed over the last few years is everyone's instead of collaborating, they're just trying to compete. And I think that creates an unhealthy industry, an unhealthy environment, and really kind of a backstabbing type of fruit that comes from that. So for us at Centered, I was like, we want to collaborate. I don't want to reinvent the wheel. We partner with people that do stuff all the time that, sure, maybe we could build ourselves, but why would we? They do it better. And so we've got a few partnerships like that right now where, you know, we just do an API integration with them and we partner with them, and we want people to know that that's their brand and that we're their, you know, a trusted centered partner. And I don't know where people thought that partnering with people to do a rev share is a bad idea. You know,
I think honestly, it's the management of it for a lot of brands. It seems like they don't want to manage the revenue coming in and reconciling and all of that. For right. Brands that I've worked with that have been hesitant, that's usually it. It's like the management of it just seems like too much. It's taking away from our core business. But then at the same time, when you're getting away from your core business by trying to do everything and be everything to everyone, you're kind of doing the same thing, and you're actually burning out your resources way faster than just recognizing and saying, hey, there's like three different things we want to accomplish. Let's partner with another brand on two of these, and let's invest our resources into making this other one happen. Exactly. But you're so right. I think like it's collaboration over competition. And I wish that more people were open-minded to that. I mean, that goes from also like even management. Sometimes people are like scared to, you know, give credit to somebody that like is a part of their team or, you know, works for them, because, you know, they're kind of feeling threatened, and brands as well in business. What's been the toughest part of getting this thing off the ground? Cause I mean, it's a friggin' animal right now.
We use what's called EOS, which is Entrepreneur Onboarding System. It's based on a book called Traction. I honestly say any entrepreneur, you're crazy not to implement EOS into your business. I'm plugging EOS because it's if for someone like me and my personality, it's what I was missing for 20 years. And I remember 3 or 4 years ago looking, going, what do I need to better myself as a CEO? And I keep failing, right? I get to a point of success, but it's never the success that I expected, right? And so I remember going out, and a friend of mine, who is my coach, Colin. And I'd see business coaches, and I had a few over the years, but I was never that impressed with business coaches. I was like, okay, it didn't really do it for me. Probably because for me in education, I think there was a movie that Tom Cruise was in where he used to call it the professor. Oh yeah, from Cocktail. You're like, well, you're teaching because you couldn't hack it in the real world. And I was kind of in that rebel that felt that way a little bit. So it's like, yeah, you teach because you can never be a successful entrepreneur. and I felt like that with coaches a little bit. So I found Colin, who had exited a company, sold his company for $100 million or something like that in the UK. And he started diving into EOS. And honestly, that the reason I get to answer your question in a second is that started changing my course. I started doing 90-minute sessions with him and implementing EOS. And he asked me a tough question. He goes, what's your dream exit? What's your plan to exit? No one ever asked me that, and I never even thought to think about it, because I felt like that would be a little arrogant to think about, ooh, what's my exit plan? But honestly, we went through a process of going, okay, this is what I think it looks like to exit for me personally as an individual, not the business, for me personally, and put a plan together for that over the last 3 years. And that began to help me how I do my hiring, how I do my firing. And in business, I think the hardest thing is people. You, especially when you're a startup, because it's just ugly. There's times where cash is coming in and there's times where it's not. When you're self-funding it, like I've had to do, and not getting VCs to jump in on what your vision was, especially during the pandemic, no one wanted to touch travel. And I'm tenacious, so I don't give up. But I think people management, we deal with it now. We're dealing with it right now. We're dealing with it in this present moment. I think a lot of people are right now. I mean, look at all the layoffs because people are worried about recession, and their balance sheets aren't what they thought they'd be. Their earnings aren't what they thought they'd be. Listen, I've been through three of those. Whoop-de-doo. That's going to happen. I think you have to build a business, whether there's an upturn in the market or a downturn, people use your product. I've always believed that. It's like the market is driven by fear and greed. And so in entrepreneurship, we're also driven by fear and greed. And I think the hardest thing for me is finding the right people. And I'm very proud to say that like my core team, no matter what happens and shit hits the fan, some days you are on the highest highs. And then the next day you're in the lowest lows, right? That's entrepreneurship life. And I think people believe in you and believe in your vision and trust you, and you earn their trust, then no matter what happens, you're going to get through it. But the younger and newer, hate to say, people that come into a startup like us or many others, they don't look at it that way. They don't come from that environment. Maybe they're just out of school, or also maybe not used to working remotely, because that's tough too when you're in your early 20s, right? Like, you know, we all worked at an office in New York City and went to happy hours. So we're navigating this unknown that's very unpredictable. So I think the thing about the market that we're in right now, the economy we're in right now, our teams that we're trying to build right now is the unpredictable, right? You just can't predict what's going to happen tomorrow. And that's exciting. We have to be positive. We need to flip that. It's exciting that we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And yeah, there's a lot of shit going on in the world, but you know what? There's nothing new under the sun. There's always been shit going on in the world. What can we do to change our lifestyles to help people and be more of a servant type of business? That's how I've always been. And so for me, with Center, it's about how we can serve people. And we have a huge agenda, but it comes down to some people aren't going to buy into that vision, and other people just want to collect a paycheck. So for, you know, and that's cool too. I get it. They want to take care of themselves and so on, but people has always been an issue, you know, when it comes to starting startups. It's never fun when you have to lay people off. It's never fun when you have to say, sorry, can't pay you this month because we don't have enough cash in. I've had years of that. That's, no one really wants to talk about that, even though all of us entrepreneurs deal with that on a daily basis sometimes. Maybe they think that, oh, as an entrepreneur, I'm going to look like I'm not successful because I'm dealing with this issue. The reality is we do, and we're all in it right now. And I think if we're more open about that, I think that's where having my coach help me is, like, I can be dishonest and brutal and tell you, Vanessa, you know, these are the things that we've struggled with as a business and we're getting out of. And I think a lot of people today are dealing with that right now. And it's tough. It's tough right now to lay people off. We don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. But I think sometimes for me, it's how I handled it in the past. Now I'm just kind of, you just got to go with it. And so people issues, the other is issues that we've really had a hard time with is capital raising. No one really wanted to touch travel. And I say no one, but no institutions were going to touch it. So we had to go out there and find small angel investors and really just build a business based on revenue. And I was challenged by that and said, okay, this, I'm going to accept what's in front of me, that probably no one's going to, in the institutional world, is going to write me a check for a travel tech company. and say, we're going to go and focus on and chasing revenue and building EBITDA. And that's what we've done. And it's not been easy, because there's been times where we've had to say to the team, sorry, team, we're going to cut you to part-time. Or other times we've had to say to the team over the last 3 or 4 years, sorry, we're going to have to let you go. And it's hard. I think some people don't understand it, because they're like, there was a high, high, and then there's that low, low, and there's that high, high, and there's that low, low. And I think that just navigating that, but sticking to your core beliefs, sticking to your core vision of the business, and very easily to be distracted by fear, greed, or great opportunities. That's, those three things are what really kill a business. Fear, greed, and great opportunities. Staying focused to that, I think, is what gets us through it. And we're really excited over the next couple of months, because we're about to hit some significant revenue that we've worked our butts off to hit. And that revenue replaces institutional capital that dilutes us. So there you go. You know, you can say maybe we failed on raising institutional money. Probably. I don't know. Maybe I'm the worst salesman in the world to VCs. I don't have a clue. But we just got in the trenches, and my core team has figured it out. And I think that says a lot about businesses right now. I think stop thinking about raising capital. I think there's this terminology that sounds cool to talk about Series A, Series B, Series C. Who cares? Build a product that changes the world, and if it's and make it profitable. And not take on a ton of overhead. That's what we need to get back to, the fundamentals of business 101. So, I mean, those are my issues I deal with. I'm sure I've got more.
So. We all do, but it's funny. I feel like people just want to like show the highlight reel, right? Like it was like a steady trajectory of just on the up and up. And it's, and then people kind of gloss over like, oh, there were some challenges along the way, but you're right. I mean, I've worked with several startups. They all go through cash flow issues of like, okay, how are we going to pay that invoice next Monday? Like, how are we going to get these people paid? You know, like we're going to have to juggle some things around. And that's just the reality of it. And I give you a lot of credit and have a lot of respect for you for saying it instead of just glossing over it. And, you know, it was a little short-sighted for these VC companies to not want to invest in travel because obviously, you know, like these things are like a roller coaster, right? It goes like up and down. And when you ride the wave, you know that like it's going to come back again. And, you know, it all worked out because now you can do it your way. So instead of having to answer, and that's like a double-edged sword, right? It's like a blessing and a curse when you get that funding because now you're having to answer to people, having to do it their way, having to justify why you want to do it another way. But Ryan, like the revenue model, like you're talking about getting this revenue that's coming in, is that based solely on transactions? Like does Centered, how do you make your money? Is it based on each transaction a percentage or is there something more to it?
I always felt you've got to diversify like an asset allocation and financial planning, right? You need to asset allocate your business because in downturns, one part of your revenue stream might go down and dry up, but the other might save you. I've learned that the hard way, putting all your eggs in one basket, right? So we actually generate revenue in really unique ways. We do it through telehealth and that serves people in traveling abroad, which right now is extremely important. You know, event crisis management and telehealth is something we're very proud of in our business because people are traveling. Oh, look at Europe. You were just in Greece. I mean, I was just in London last week. It is busy, but people are still sick, including myself. I'm off and on with this flu bug that was going around. And, you know, how do I manage that crisis for myself, for my children when I'm traveling? I think that's a peace of mind product that's always going to be strong for us revenue wise. So, and then during the pandemic, obviously we weren't making any revenue on our book a class feature because classes weren't open in New York City or LA and stuff. So, you know, I think for us it's, we make a transaction based on, you know, a booking. So if I book a yoga class, we make a percentage of that booking, not huge, but we're about large volume. You know, for us, it was like the B2B play was so important because large volume, we kind of knew, like you said about travel and VCs not wanting to touch us. Travel is the only industry in the world that went to zero. Even fitness studios were semi-open or they pivoted over to digital. You couldn't pivot travel. Couldn't go anywhere. And so to me, again, I look at opportunities and maybe I'm the most, you know, naive optimist in the world. I'd rather be that way. But I'm sorry, but that's an opportunity. I mean, talk about from zero to 20x return on your investment for us as a business. So we knew we could ride that wave. I'm a surfer, so I'm going to ride that wave. And I saw that travel wave coming. I'm like, Center's going to ride that wave. But we're going to create a product that you're so addicted, you want to use us all the time. So to protect us from just, you know, we don't just do travel. You can go book a hair appointment with one of our amazing brand partners. You'll go get a dry bar and get your hair done around the corner and you can discover that on the app. So for us, it's hard to communicate sometimes your business model, right? So like people are like, what is Center? What do you do? I go, well, we are a travel wellness focused first business, but we're all about discovery. At the end of the day, we're about discovery to give you less time looking at Google and Yelp and searching out something. I mean, I just moved to Fort Lauderdale a year and a half ago. Still haven't found a hairstylist that I like, you know, little things like that. Now I just went on my app and found them. I was like, I don't know why I didn't do that. Why did I go to Google and I have the app? I'm an idiot. Like, isn't that ridiculous? I can't believe I'm saying that. Joel, my head of beauty, would be so mad at me, but I'm like, you know, so I think for us, it's transactions for booking. It's also where we saw an opportunity to be environmental free, what I call carbon negative. And so we have a rev model where a consumer can start earning rewards to make choices to become carbon negative. And we make about $1 or $2 per that transaction. But to a consumer like you and I, It's like gamifying it. So I decide I live in London or New York. So let's just say New York City. I'm going to go eat at a vegan restaurant. I scan my receipt. You're going to earn a Centric coin. That's pretty cool that you can spend it on Marketplace. I take a city bike instead of taking, you know, the subway, which creates off a lot of carbon emissions. I can earn rewards. So we've really created really cool ways to earn extra revenue in our business, not just a transactional business. But yeah, I mean, at the core of what we do, it's about that booking. You know, we didn't want to rely on recurring revenue. Like right now, you know, with in our MasterCard app that's going live or in any of the credit card apps, they're just fetching our API and they're paying us a percentage of the booking, right? So, but when you go over to our consumer product, yeah, we're going to charge an annual membership like Clear does. But you can't rely on that, whatever that cost is for that annual membership, to generate a lot of profit. So at the end of the day, you got to get people using your platform. And so I think for us, it's like finding what people are doing, studying what people are doing, which I think we all know, and then giving them it such an easy way to access it that of course they're going to book it. So, you know, we don't want a one-time transaction per year type of thing. We want you to, you know, to book on our app all the time.
Oh, it makes so much sense because it's like you've learned the loyalty reward system from the inside out, and now you're kind of improving upon that through your own platform. So it just makes so much sense. I love it. Well, Brian, I could talk to you all day about this stuff, but let's wrap it up for the audience and for you so you can go about your day. If somebody wants to connect with you, they want to learn more about Centered, how can they do that?
Just email me, brian@centered-wellness.com. I'm sure we can send the link too, but just email me. That's the best way.
Okay, awesome. Thanks so much, Brian.
Hey, this was fun.
Hi, everyone. This is your host, Vanessa Severiano. Thanks for tuning into this episode. If it brought you value, please subscribe, review, and share the Business Side of Fitness podcast. If you'd like to learn more about working with me, please click the link in the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and I'll catch you on the next episode.